I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If the Bucs start 3-0, does Jameis Winston get his job back? And what's the impact of defensive line coach Brenson Buckner? Has time run out on the Rays finally? And are the Lightning still looking for that defenseman? It's time for the popular mailbag segment where all your questions are answered correctly. On this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get started on this podcast, I want to tell you about a special offer from Audible.com. Sign up now and you get a free 30-day trial. That's a $15 value. And as a listener to this podcast, you also get a free audiobook. Now, here's what you do. Go to audibletrial.com/sportsday. That's spelled A-U-D-I-B-L-E, trial.com/sportsday for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. All right, so the first few days of training camp is in the books. The Bucs are off on this day as we sit here and record this podcast. So they'll be back at it, of course, this morning. And I think this has been a kind of an eventful first week, if you will, with Jameis Winston, of course, having to face the music and talk about his three-game suspension. We learned how Ryan Fitzpatrick is taking the number one reps, how they're going to split those up. With Winston really kind of hopping in there with the second and third and sometimes the first group. Some rookies are standing out, so I know there's lots of questions about the Bucs, questions about the Rays and their recent collapse, and also whether the Lightning, as we said, still in it for maybe adding some players. So I'm ready to go when you are, Steve.
All right, well, the biggest question we've been getting from lots of people are, what's going on with Maui? Has he found his hook yet?
And, of course, when you say Maui, you mean Vita Vea, the number one draft pick, 12th overall by the Bucs, of course, from Washington, the defensive tackle. Yeah, scary moment the other day. I mean, you never want to see players go down, but first day in pads, it was a hot morning. You know, I saw many a 300-pound guy, and, of course, Vea is 347. But I saw a lot of guys struggling with the heat, especially the linemen on both sides of the ball. I mean, Ali Marpet had to take a lot of fluids. A lot of guys were getting you know, the water dumped over their heads and everything. So, you know, when you put those pads on, it can be pretty hot. Now, I don't know that there's a relationship between Vea's injury and maybe the heat or the dehydration, but it looks like a soft tissue injury in that he has a what they're calling a left calf strain. And so that's better than anything that you would hear like a pull or a tear. Now, I would say this, that, you know, sometimes there's swelling, and it may take a day or two for them to actually have him get an MRI where they can really assess the total damage. I do think that they think it's not serious and that it's not something that's going to necessarily keep him out of the regular season or even, for that matter, we don't know about training camp or the preseason yet. But let me just caution you that, you know, because he's so important to what they plan to do this year at defensive tackle, big body guy, a guy that looks like, Steve, he's going to be anchoring, you know, the run game in there. They're going to have a rotation, of course, with Bo Allen and Mitch Unrein and some other people to play alongside Gerald McCoy. But, you know, Vita Vea is a load. He's a force, and he's you know, not just a space eater, but a guy who can also penetrate. And it's going to be very hard for them, the opposing team, to not commit resources to him. And usually that means more than one blocker at times. So they like the way he's picked up their defense. And talking to some of the Bucs coaches, they think he's going to be exactly what they want on the inside of that defensive line. And so, you know, even though training camp just started, they like where he's at in terms of understanding what's going on. He's going to have to take some mental reps because, quite frankly, I think, you know, as it is with most of these players, when you get a guy hurt, the goal is to be full go September 9th when they go to New Orleans. That's the only date that they're the most concerned about. It's going to set him back because he's a rookie and he could use the reps. But he was, you know, he was here for a good part of the OTAs, most of the OTAs, certainly rookie minicamp. So he got a lot of mental reps that way. But it's unfortunate that they just put the pads on and now he has to, you know, kind of take it easy for a while. But as of now, at least, it doesn't look like it's something that's going to prevent him from playing in the regular season.
Well, while we're on rookies, let's talk about some of the other rookies, how they've looked so far in training camp, such as Carlton Davis or MJ Stewart as the defensive backs, Ronald Jones at running back, Jack Ceci at linebacker, Alex Kappa on the offensive line. How have they all looked?
Well, you might have to run through that list for me again here in a minute, but I'll start with the corners. I think the guy that's sort of stood out, and maybe this wasn't the case, you know, during the OTAs, he was sort of came on late, but that's MJ Stewart, and he's getting a lot of reps right now, and that's because, you know, you have Vernon Hargraves, who had that gash on his leg early in training camp, and so he really has been unable to practice. So what that did was it gave, you know, a guy like Stewart a chance to play sort of in the slot in the nickel defensive package, the sub package, and he has been very impressive. I mean, you know, he's kind of an understated guy in that he's not the biggest guy in the world. He doesn't stand out to you physically, although he's a fairly good hitter, a guy that will stick his nose in there. And he's not, you know, because he's not a big long guy, you know, you don't really notice him all that much in pass coverage, but he always seems to be in the right spot. And he had an interception the other day. He was credited with forcing a fumble with Ronald Jones, although I think Quan Alexander had a lot to do with that, quite frankly. But he has had a pretty stellar first week, in part because he's getting opportunity, and that's what rookies need. But yet he's taking advantage of it. So we don't know with Hargraves. We expect him to come back. Carlton Davis isn't playing as much. I mean, they've been using, at least with the first group, they've been using Ryan Smith to play, you know, the cornerback position on the outside when they go to base, or on the outside when they're a nickel with Hargraves out. So we haven't seen as much with him with the first group, although he had a really good, you know, OTAs and rookie mini camp and things like that, and veteran mini camp. So he stood out then. So I really think the corners are pretty good. As far as Ronald Jones goes, look, Ronald Jones is going to start out, I think, being a two-down back. I think eventually in this league he could play all three downs, but we all know that there are two things that rookies struggle with, especially at the running back position. The first one is ball security. And Jones wasn't really necessarily known for being a fumbler, so I don't know that I want to put that brand on him. But what they find out is that you can never be careless with the football at this level. I mean, those guys know how to get the ball out if you're not securing it high and tight. And that happened in practice the other day where Ronald Jones coughed up a fumble, and then, you know, and they hit harder. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you got, you know, 6'6", 256-pound defensive ends that are running a 4.5 40, so you can get splattered out there. The other thing that they learn is that, you know, no matter what they did in pass protection in college, it ain't just one guy you have to worry about. I mean, these defenses, they bring some exotic blitzes, and they come from all angles. And there is a, you know, there is a way to where if you're in pass protection on third down, you know, you're all that's between, you know, the quarterback getting killed or not. And you have to look both inside and outside, and also front and back in terms of where the pressure may be coming from. And you have to identify that. And then you have to execute the block. And sometimes you have to cross the quarterback's face to do that. But it's not just 1, 2, you know, which one of these linebackers are coming. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And you have to make those decisions really quick, because if there isn't anybody coming, if they don't blitz and they just disguise it, you may have to go out and then read the defense and then run an option route. So a lot swimming right now in Ronald Jones's head. He did a little better in pass protection the second day in pads than he did the first, but you know, he's got a learning curve. The best thing Ronald Jones can do is when you turn and hand him the ball. You don't have to teach him what to do there. He will figure out how to run to daylight, and that's what he's going to be doing best for the Bucs, I think, at least early in the season. They got other third down backs that they can use, whether that's Charles Sims or Jacquizz Rodgers, you know, or even Wilson, Sean Wilson, the kid from Duke, who they really, really like. As far as let's see, who else do we have on that list?
Jack Ceci.
Yeah, he's in a tough battle because the numbers just don't work out for him. I mean, if you take the starting three linebackers, okay, Levante, Quan, and you know, most likely Kendall Beckwith, if he gets back in time, and I think he will. So then the backups right now would be a Darius, you know, what used to be a Darius Glanton, now a Darius Taylor. He's changed his name, taking his father's name. And he right now is starting at the strong side linebacker position with Beckwith out. And he could play all three positions. He's a very good special teams player. So he's going to make the football team. And Devontae Bond was that other guy that played Sam last year as well. Had a lot of special teams tackles, had some penalties, but somebody that they count on to play all teams in terms of kick coverage. So those two, that would give you five. And then Riley Bulla has gotten some good reviews. They say that he's really improved his game. He's become more versatile, has picked things up a lot better than, of course, he did a year ago. So they like what Riley's doing. And then you would have probably Cici. So I think it's going to be hard for Cici maybe to make the 57. His goal should be to, if you can't make the regular 53-man roster, if you can't make the 53, then you want to be part of the 61. You want to be part of the practice squad. So I think he has a shot at doing that. But until you get into games, I think that's where, Cici is very smart. I think that's where you'll see, some of those guys start to separate themselves when they get to play against other teams. Yeah, well, Kappa finally, I got good reports on him last week. You know, they're not exactly sure where he's going to play. I think they'd like for him to be a swing guy. What I mean by that is somebody that can play tackle, which is what he did, in college his final year, but can also, athletic enough to play maybe inside if you need him. These guys that get a helmet on Sunday have to be able to play more than one position, and you have a lot of guys that can play guard or center. What you need is someone who could hold up inside if they had to, but can also back up either tackle position. And so that's how you not only make the team, but you also get a helmet and you're one of the, the 47 or so, 46 that they dress on Sunday. So they like Alex so far. Had a coach mention how good he's looking early on. He's a big man, and he has a little bit of nastiness, so he's not backing down anybody. He looks pretty good.
All right, Ellis asked, I've been reading that the physicality of Bucks camp has noticeably increased. Do you have the same observation, and what do you see as the possible advantages or disadvantages of this?
I don't see that. There's a lot of talk about it, and they weren't very physical last year. I think if you're seeing more physicality, it's because they have better players. I mean, it's as simple as that. Bigger, better players. I mean, they have big men. So obviously, when you're blocking 347, that's different than trying to block a guy that's, 300 pounds. And I mean, that's what we're talking about, Jason Pierre-Paul is 6'6". I mean, you have some large men now playing on the defensive line. Bo Allen, whether you're at 320-something, Stevie T is still there as well. He's another 330-pound, 325-pound guy or 340-pound guy. So, I mean, they have big bodies, and I think when you see big bodies, you just naturally think that things must be more physical, and maybe they are just because of the law of physics, right? But in terms of the way they practice, look, the whole idea about practice at this stage of the game, even when you put on pads, is that you want to go hard, but you don't want to put guys on the ground. When guys go to the ground, that's when the pileups happen, that's when offensive linemen get rolled up on, and that's how you get the knee injuries and the ankle injuries and things like that. So you can practice hard, you can be physical, but it's what we call pro thump. You don't wrap anybody up, you don't take anyone to the ground unless you have a live period. And then that's really what's been missing from, today's football, if you will. I think coaches were much more prone in the past, to go I remember a ton of training camps that they would start first day in pads. They would have a live goal line drill, and they put the ball on the 2-yard line, and they'd run about five plays with the first team and five plays with the second team and so on. And those guys were going hard, and that got the juices flowing the first day in pads. They really don't do that anymore, or as much, at least their cutter doesn't. And, his reasoning is that, look, it really doesn't matter right now how physical you are or how much you practice full speed in practice as far as tackling and hitting goes. What matters is that you have all your best players ready when the regular season starts. So it's about getting guys to the starting line. They figure they know how to play football, and there's lots of disagreement about that. But, all I'll say is that Dirk Koetter is pretty much running the same camp he did when the Bucks went 9-7, and I don't remember anybody after they went 9-7 looking back and saying, I bet they would have won 10 or 11 games if they'd have been more physical in training camp. I think they just have better players, and so sometimes, and bigger players, and that makes it appear to be more physical.
Okay, we have a question about the observations at training camp. How much has Coach Brenson Buckner impacted the defense?
Well, I mean, he's going to impact them. I don't know how much he's done it so far because, again, you know, defensive linemen don't really do a whole lot. You can't tell a whole lot when they're in shorts. And so they've been in pads a couple of days. What I've observed of Brenson since he got here is a couple things. One, he has an incredible amount of sort of street cred, credibility, because he played in this league for 12 years, and I think he was on three Super Bowl teams. And he's a guy that's been successful with all kinds of different pass rushers wherever he's been, certainly when he was with the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, he walks in the building, and guys respect the fact that he has been there, done that. Because there's not a lot, when you really think about it, when you think about defensive line coaches around the league or just coaches in general, there's some former players, but the really great former players usually aren't looking for 100-hour work weeks. And, you know, they've usually made enough money to where this is not the profession they choose when their playing days are over. But Buckner did. Now, the thing I've noticed about Buckner is he adapts sort of his teaching. He's not asking guys to do something they can't do. You know, he's played with a lot of different body types and a lot of different guys. And so, you know, when he looks at a guy like Will Golson, who, you know, had no sacks last year, but Will has a certain skill set, he's going to try to utilize that to Will's advantage. I mean, Will's a taller, leaner guy. He's actually lost some weight this year. He got too heavy a year ago. So Buckner has played with guys, you know, that had to find another way to do it instead of just power, right? And Will's not he's not the fastest guy on the team by any means, but he's got length. And so I think what I've seen is Buckner really push these guys hard. Number one, he's not afraid. He has no sacred cows. I mean, we saw him. We wrote about him jumping Gerald McCoy for jumping off sides. So I think so far so good. But if there's going to be a difference as far as the coaching staff goes, I think he's really going to make one.
All right, Thad asked, what if the Bucs start 3-0, the offense is rolling and balanced, Fitz looks comfortable, very few turnovers by the offense, with Cutter and Light's jobs hanging in the balance, is it a guarantee that they insert Winston back in the lineup in game four?
No, I don't see why it would be. I mean, under this scenario that you're just giving me, they're 3-0. I'll even say if they're 2-1, having just won, you know, that last game before he comes back, depending on how Fitz is playing, right? I mean, you can win games and maybe your quarterback not play great, right? But you're not going to win many if he plays bad. So if they get to 2-1, it means he's playing at least okay. And so without knowing just what kind of numbers he put up, I mean, if they won in spite of the quarterback because their defense took the game over or created a lot of turnovers or field position, then maybe that's a different picture. But 3-0 on a Monday night beating the Pittsburgh Steelers, so you would have gone to New Orleans, won there. You'd have hosted the Super Bowl champion Eagles at home in your home opener, beat them, and then turn around on a Monday night in front of the national TV audience and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. I would say in a short week, which is when Winston will be coming back, at 3-0 or maybe even 2-1, depending on how you get there, there would be no reason to try to rush him back in a short week and get him in the lineup to go to Chicago and play the Bears. I would think they would stick with Fitzpatrick. Now, I'm not naive here. First of all, I don't predict that happening. Secondly, you know, Jameis Winston is on this football team. That means he's going to be their starting quarterback. And even Ryan Fitzpatrick knows, while this is a different role for him, and he's seen a lot of different roles, he knows he is not here to be a starter. He is here to support Jameis. He's here to be able to play if he gets hurt and be able to practice and be ready to go in without taking many reps during the week. So Jameis is going to be the quarterback, but make no mistake, you know, you ride the hot hand, and they'll have to evaluate how Fitzpatrick is playing. But I think it would mean that you're playing pretty well as a team if you get that far.
All right, we'll switch to the Rays, and Bob asks, did the clock strike midnight for the Rays? A blowout every once in a while is understandable, but 3-0?
I don't think it's just the 3-0. I think it's who they lost to. You know, they lost to the team with the worst record in baseball, and not only that, they gave up 37 runs in the last three games. So Clearly, the big culprit was, you know, was the pitching staff, and that's really kind of been the strength or one of the strengths. I mean, look, they surprised everybody with both the way they've pitched and hit. You know, they were a top 10 team in run score.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As well, which nobody saw coming. But the pitching was really what sort of got out of whack on this last road trip. I mean, before they went to Baltimore, don't forget, they took 2 out of 3 against the New York Yankees. So really no shame in how they played coming out of the All-Star break. This has been a team that, for whatever reason, has been prone to really, really bad streaks. And then they've had some really, really good streaks. What they can't do is they can't, you know, win 2, lose 1, win 3, lose 2, win 4, lose 1. They just seem to, you know, win 6, lose 3. You know, I mean, it's sort of been back and forth, and that's why this team's at 500. There is a good question to ask, and I think you have to allow for the fact that we don't know what we're seeing. And what I mean by that is, you know, at some point, we're going to find out whether all this usage of these relief pitchers and these openers is going to come back, and there's going to be a price to pay for it. And, you know, physically, maybe these guys won't pitch more innings than they would have. But mentally, having to start games is different than coming in the fourth or fifth inning, and having to be extended is different than maybe pitching, you know, 1 or 2 batters just, you know, in a matchup situation. So there's going to be this is uncharted water for everybody. And so I think it's hard to take any particular, you know, road series or even as bad as the one that they were in Baltimore and say, okay, this is clearly, you know, the result of using all the bullpen, using them up in the first half of the year. I just don't think we know yet. But I think it's also just the personality of this baseball team. Now, there's going to be changes, you know, and so, you know, almost every time that they've done things, you know, everybody's kind of waited for the shoe to drop and say, well, that's it, they're done. But they find a way to be resilient, and whoever they throw out there, they find a way to win baseball games. And it's been the damnedest thing, you know, in the world to kind of watch. You know, you trade Alex Colome and, you know, all these different guys, Denard Span, and you think, okay, well, that's it. But then somebody else steps up. So I would say we'll have to wait probably at least well into this next month to kind of know what we're looking at. But then again, it won't be the same team if they make a bunch of trades, which is what I expect them to do.
Well, speaking of trades, and in full disclosure, we're taping this podcast late Monday afternoon, so a little under 24 hours until the trade deadline. What's the Rays roster going to look like come Tuesday night as the Angels come to town?
Well, I think it'll be different, Steve, but I don't know how different it'll be. And I think the biggest thing is Chris Archer. You know, I mean, that would seem to be the guy that, you know, we've heard as many as 10 teams. You know, he spent his off day in North Carolina. He wasn't even coming back to Tampa. You know, he said that it's been, you know, sort of stressful, you know, to be mentioned as much as he has been, you know, in trade rumors. And these guys are human, like we talked about the other day. So I think the key would be parting ways with him. They're still in control of him for a number of years at a reasonable price. I just don't know that they're going to get a better deal. Certainly they could wait until next offseason and be able to deal with all 30 teams. But you know what? They had that opportunity this year, and I don't think he's increased his value by the way he's pitching. I think he has as high an ERA at this point as he's had at any point in his career. It's considerably over 4, I guess, right now. You know, so it just doesn't seem like you can bank on it being better, you know, in the offseason as far as trade goes. So I think he probably gets moved by Tuesday at 4 o'clock. And then I think, you know, with Wilson Ramos, that's a little different story. Somebody will have to take sort of a flyer on him only because, you know, he's starting his rehab stint. He's still coming off that hamstring injury. Now, if you don't think it's long term and you're willing to, you know, willing to do it, then he'd be a good pickup for somebody. Echevarria, I don't see, you know, even though Adames hasn't played very well, I just don't see how he sticks around. But then again, I can't tell you that there's a contending team that's in desperate need of a shortstop. So
they may,
know,
just DFA Echevarria just to give Adames
they could
more
do
time.
That.
I mean, you wait to see if you can trade them, and then you may just DFA them.
Right. And who else would be in that?
Sergio Romo is a possibility.
I could
Carlos
see Romo.
Gomez,
I don't know who would want him, to be honest with you. I mean, he's not having a good year, and I don't know what he could do for you. Romo, for sure, I could see a contending team saying, this is a guy that, you know, was a big-time closer, pitched in World Series games, still effective because his stuff is still good enough, and it's deceptive enough with the sweeping sliders and things like that. I could definitely see Romo getting an opportunity.
You know, one name you haven't heard, and maybe there's not enough interest because he's probably still under team control for a while, but it's CJ Cron, who's already hit 22 home runs this year. I'm sure there's teams that could use a guy like that could run into one.
I bet they could. Do you think they would trade him, and do you think that Matt Duffy would be a guy that they would consider trading?
I think everyone's available for the right price with this team. And when you're a smaller market team like this, you have to. I mean, even if it's your prized Jake Bowers or Willy Adames prospect, if the price is right, and that price is very high on some of those guys. But, yeah, I think they'd listen to offers on Matt Duffy or CJ Cron or anybody else on the roster.
Mark Tompkins.
Even Blake Snell.
Remember.
I think they'd listen for Blake Snell. I don't think they're interested in trading him, but they would listen.
Yeah. It doesn't cost you anything to listen, but you're going to have to blow somebody away.
Oh, yeah, I don't see a team. Definitely not at the trade deadline for Blake. Now, in the offseason, that's when that deal more likely would get done if you're going to trade him.
Mark Tompkins was mentioning the San Diego Padres as a possible landing spot for Archer, and that they had some catching there as well. So they definitely are in need of that, especially if they get rid of Ramos. They're going to have to get a catcher back from one of those teams, whether it's a three-way deal.
Well, you got Michael Perez
just
now. So if you're trading Ramos, you still got your two catchers in Sucre and Michael Perez.
And Perez has been impressive so far.
Mm-hmm. He's done very well so far.
Interesting guy, Perez, has spent 8 years in the minor leagues and had a couple injuries and was, was a prospect and sort of off the radar. And I like the way he swings a bat. He's shown off his arm pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, they definitely would have their two catchers with him and Sucre, but there could be more if somebody were better that they felt like could help them now. And that's the thing. I think they're getting back guys that are, you know, could be part of this young core that can play in the majors, sooner rather than later. It used to be you would get those developmental guys, whether it was Adames many years ago, remember, and they had to wait on him to work his way up, that sort of thing in Bowers. But now it's like it seems to me like they're getting a better, higher grade return on their investment.
Speaking of long stint in the minors, and this is off topic, but did you see the Angels catcher Francisco Arcia's start in his career? He's 28 years old. He spent 12 years in the minors. He's the first player in Major League Baseball history to collect 10 RBI in his first two games.
Well, God bless him. He waited long enough,
exactly.
Man. He's like Crash Davis. Jeez, that's terrific. So, I thought they threw wicked stuff in the show, man.
Yeah,
five RBIs in two games?
10 in two. He had six in
total,
one game and four in another. So,
jeez.
Just an amazing start for a guy who spent 12 years in the minors. So just,
it's pretty cool.
Just
that's
off topic
really cool.
There.
Yeah.
All right, for the Lightning, Anthony asked, are they looking at any other right-handed defensemen besides Carlson, maybe Tanev or Trouba or Justin Falk?
I mean, Steve, I'll defer to you, but I believe that defensemen is something that they are always looking for, and certainly now.
They're always looking for defensemen. The right-handed defenseman is very coveted. It's amazing how most of the best defensemen are left-handed in the league, and there's more left-handed defensemen than right-handed defensemen in the league. So right-handed defensemen, it's been a bugaboo for the Lightning particularly. That's why they have interest in Carlson. I've really always liked Jacob Trouba, who's in Winnipeg, who says he wants to stay there long-term, but they had to go to arbitration this year for his contract, which generally isn't a good sign for a guy you want to keep long-term, that you couldn't come to a deal first, that you had to go to arbitration. He won that arbitration deal. So there's talk that maybe that Winnipeg will look to trade him at some point. It'll be interesting what Carolina does with Falk there. As far as trading and where they trade him to could impact a lot of things around the league as well, and could impact the Carlson trade too if they decide to trade him. Carolina hasn't said for sure they're going to. So I think the Lightning are always looking for right-handed defensemen. It's definitely probably the weakest spot in their organization as far as depth and minors and all this. I mean, they've got some young defensemen coming up, but right-handed defensemen you can never have enough of in hockey.
It is interesting how, you know, these things get heated up and then they kind of abate, you know, and then I guess, you know, as you get closer to whatever deadline, they'll start to heat up again, right? I mean, everything kind of happens at the right when it's supposed to happen.
I saw Elliot Friedman on, I believe it was on NHL Network a week or so ago, and just they were talking about some of the trades, and particularly Erik Karlsson. He says, I don't believe it was ever that close as what had been reported by some people. That the talks were ongoing and there was interest in several teams and maybe, you know, offers were intriguing, but it was never that close to where it was a done deal as the one guy at TSN had reported that was being called to the league office that, you know, he believes that it will happen, but at much closer to the start of training camp or, you know, September, or maybe even right before the season starts in October.
Sounds good.
All right, and one final question from Les. What is the biggest takeaway of Tiger Woods' performance in the Open? The fact he got the lead on the back nine on Sunday or the fact that he choked it away? There was a time Tiger didn't lose leads on Sunday. Does that mean he's back or that he can't win?
This is Wes, but I don't think it's my son, Wes, although he's asking about
Les.
Tiger.
Les.
Oh, Les, good. I guess I thought you said Wes. Because my son actually asked me almost a similar question the other day, so it'd be interesting if he submitted one. But
unless he's Tiger got a fake Twitter profile.
Well, he might. He might have one of those bot accounts. Who knows? Burner accounts. Tiger Woods, to me, is, I think, having to get belief in himself again, which sounds really odd, right? I mean, here's a guy that never lost a lead on Sunday. He was there. I mean, he had a one-shot lead, after 10 holes in a major tournament, you know, at the British Open or the Open in Scotland. And it had been a long time since he stood on that stage. And I think, you know, there was a time when, of course, you know, if Tiger Woods had that lead, everybody else would sort of shrink. They would be like, oh, man, Tiger Woods, you know, I can't run him down. And there was an intimidation factor. And now I think, you know, so many of these guys that never played with Tiger in his prime, they meet the challenge. They don't, you know, I think obviously a lot of them got into golf because of Tiger Woods, and he's sort of their idol in a way, but they didn't get to see him when he was Tiger Woods. But for Tiger, I think he just has to learn and gain confidence that he can finish it again. It's weird that, again, that you would say that about a guy that's won as many majors, but it's just been so long. His game is coming along. I mean, I think he's proven he can contend. He's been there on a Sunday now in the major. He hasn't won a tournament yet. I think winning anything, winning a tournament would really help him just to get that feeling of, you know, finishing, you know, on a Sunday. But I don't think blowing it was the big deal. I think the bigger deal is that he had a one-shot lead on the back nine on a Sunday. Nobody, when this season started, we hadn't seen Tiger Woods put two tournaments together and make the cut. You know what I mean? I mean, think about how far he's come. And when he finished second in the Valspar, it was front page news. So, you know, that was the start of the golf tournament. And here we are, the guys, you know, standing there with a lead on a Sunday in a major. That's a huge leap from where he was when the year began. And we haven't heard anything about him having recurring injuries or, you know, having to take more time off because he's, you know, he can't hold up physically. To me, that's the biggest thing. If he can stay healthy, he's not getting any younger, but if he can stay healthy the way his game's coming around, I think he has a chance.
Look, I think he's back, but it's 42-year-old Tiger Woods that's back. He's never going to be the 22-year-old Tiger Woods. I mean,
well said.
You know, everyone compares him to Jack Nicklaus, okay, who won 18 majors. He won one major after the age of 40.
Yeah, and he was 46.
Yeah, at the Masters. Right. Yeah, so I mean... Yeah. You know, you're at 42 now. He's going to be 43 in December, Tiger Woods will be.
Right.
He's probably, at most, got one or two more majors left in him to win.
Agreed.
And with his injury history, maybe it's zero.
Maybe not that, yeah.
But, you know, he's playing the best golf we've seen him play in years. And as you said, the injuries don't seem to be recurring at this point, which, you know, every time he was coming back previously, it was, you know, a round or two in or a tournament or two in, and then all of a sudden he's hurt again. You know, I think he's back, but it's 42-year-old Tiger Woods that's back, not 22-year-old Tiger Woods. We're never going to see that Tiger again.
Right.
And no, as you said,
great,
too,
it's a great point.
The young players never played against Tiger in his prime. You know, I remember this was 15 years ago, maybe even longer. You know, it was one of the majors, and I remember I was in an airport watching it, and Sergio Garcia is making a run at him. And he kind of pumped his fist in this, and Tiger kind of heard the roar, and then the next hole, Tiger Woods, you know, made a miraculous birdie, and the crowd roared, and Sergio, shrinked away, and the tournament was over.
Yeah.
You know, that intimidation factor isn't there anymore.
It's not, and the thing, even when Tiger was Tiger in his younger days, I could be wrong about this, and I don't have the stats in front of me. He was really, really good when he had the lead in the major. Mm-hmm. He didn't come from behind very often at all. I don't remember him, you know, surging past somebody on a Sunday very often.
I remember the PGA Championship in 2009 was the first time he had led a major after 54 holes and lost. Mm-hmm. That was to
he never lost with
Minnesota.
The lead. Yeah. No, he finished the deal. If he had the lead on Sunday, you were toast for the most part. But I didn't remember him coming from very far behind to win a major. So, you know, look, he stood there again, you know, after 10 holes with a one-shot lead, and he wasn't able to finish. And I think your point is great that, you know, he is not the 20-something-year-old Tiger Woods, and he hasn't done it at this age. And
let me read you. Tiger's won 14 championships. Mm-hmm. After 54 holes, here's where he stood. 9-shot lead, tied for the lead. 10-shot lead, 6-shot lead, 1-shot lead, 1-shot lead, tied for the lead, 4-shot lead, 3-shot lead, 2-shot lead, 1-shot lead, tied for the lead, 3-shot lead, 1-shot lead.
Never came back.
Never trailed after 54 holes in a major and won.
There you go. He was either tied or had a lead.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that's, you know, so if he's in the mix on Sunday, why would we expect him to come from behind when he didn't do that in his prime? But that said, he did come from behind. He did stand there again on, you know, after 10 holes with a lead he just couldn't finish. I don't know. Like, I vacillate. I don't know, because I don't know if he's going to stay healthy. But I think his game, especially around the greens, you know, I think his game is very, very good. He's putted mm-hmm. really well. He's still one of the better scramble golfers you'll ever see. He can still do that. It's just whether he can get consistent with the driver and hit enough greens and regulation and all those things. But I mean, you see the game and the crowds. I mean, he's great for golf. I'm just glad he's back, because even with all these great young golfers, no one moves the needle like Tiger Woods, even at his age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, golf has never been more popular than when Tiger Woods was playing.
No question. Hey, those are some great questions, and I think you got all the answers you could possibly need, because they're dead on, spot on answers. And we thank you for doing that. Always a fun segment with the mailbag. Of course, as we do this podcast, we are still awaiting the Rays to see if they're going to make a trade. The trade deadline will be today at 4 p.m. So we're going to have the latest for you on that on Tuesday, of course, and tell you who went where and what they got back in return. I assume there'll be some deals, but maybe even one, of course, as we speak, for Chris Archer. And then the Bucks have their second week of training camp gets underway. They had a day off on Monday, so they'll be back at it bright and early at 8:45 tomorrow. We'll have the latest from Bucks camp and tell you who's looking good there, as well as the latest update, if there is any, on Vita Vea and his injuries. And the Rays begin, going back to the Rays just for a second, they begin a series against the Anaheim Angels, or the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, or whatever the hell they call themselves these days. Mike Trout comes to the Trop. You should get out there and see him. The best baseball player, I think, in the game, and probably the guy that's closest to Mickey Mantle, if you will, without being a switch hitter. He is a phenomenal player to watch if you get a chance to go out there. So lots to talk about this week. As always, we appreciate you guys interacting with us in the mailbag segment, and you can always interact with us on Twitter at SportsDayTB. That's at SportsDayTB. You can reach me at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Love for you to rate and review this podcast, right, Steve?
Absolutely. You can do that anywhere you get your podcast, whether it's through iTunes, maybe it's Stitcher, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Subscribe to the podcast. Do a search for Sports Day Tampa Bay. Hit subscribe so it downloads to your phone every day. Then it will automatically come to your phone so you can listen to it anytime you want. Leave a comment. That always helps us, or like it, or better yet, tell a friend. And if you have a business and would like to advertise on the show, please reach out to either Rick or myself, or you can call our sales manager, Monica Boyer. Her direct line is 813-957-0836, 813-957-0836. You could be a sponsor of Sports Day Tampa Bay, much like Andy at Continental Wholesale Diamonds does several days a week for us, too. So,
absolutely. And for the latest in the Rays and their trades or the Bucks updates at minicamp, check out TampaBay.com. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times for Steve Burstink. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.